The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Reach.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom and welcome to Too Jewish with Rabbi Sam Kohan and Friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is best-selling writer, radio, and TV personality, Mitch Albom, author of Have a Little Faith and Tuesdays with Maury. We'll also have a visit from our Mevina on Jewish Ethics, Amy Hirschberg Letterman, Israel correspondent, Rabbi David Wilfon from Jerusalem, storyteller Jordan Hill, and our expert on the international scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. Too Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom! Believe it or not, this is our 400th Too Jewish show since we began broadcasting back in 2002. We're closing in on 8 years of magnificent Jewish radio experiences. We usually celebrate in August, which marks the actual annual anniversary of the start of the Too Jewish radio show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and Friends, but hitting the 400th show is a little bit amazing to me. Over those 400 weekly Too Jewish shows, we have never once missed a week or repeated a program, although I have certainly repeated a lot of the same jokes, as many of you have noted. A lot. Many times. Look, it's not the age of the joke that matters, it's the way you use it. In any case, I will save the emotional retrospective for the 8th anniversary Too Jewish show in August, but I have to note that this numerical highlight, 400 shows, comes at an auspicious time of year. Yesterday was Shabbat HaGadol, the big Sabbath that precedes Passover. Tomorrow night, Pesach begins in earnest with the first Seder. Just as the Passover season marks a time of gratitude for freedom and liberation, and a period of renewed commitment to Jewish ideals, so this show marks our own dedication to providing you, our loyal listeners, with the absolute best in Jewish radio. The best guests, the most interesting mavens on the Jewish world and Jewish life, the hottest news stories, cutting-edge controversy, and of course, the oldest jokes. Told really, really well. But in truth, one of the consistent highlights of the unique Too Jewish blend of entertainment, education, controversy, humor, and news, a kind of Jewish radio charoset, if you will, a mix of delectable elements that is so much more than the sum of its various excellent parts. In some ways, the highlight has always been Jewish music of any and all kinds. We try to bring you Jewish music in its many and varied permutations, influenced by the music of all the many countries in which we have lived, and the musical styles and flavors of the various cultures and traditions. In that spirit, and the spirit of the Passover season, we continue our pre-Passover preview of Pesach music with the wonderful Sephardic version of the Passover Seder song, Who Knows One, Echad Mi Yodea, as sung by Sephardic Israeli star Yehoram Gaon.
Ken supiense y entendiense alabar al Dio criense qual es el uno, qual es el uno. Uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo. Quien supiense y entendiense, alabar al Dio creyense, ¿cuáles son los dos? ¿Cuáles son los dos? Dos Moshe y Aarón, uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo. En su piense y entendiense, alabar al Dios creyense, ¿cuáles son los tres? ¿Cuáles son los tres? Tres nuestros padres son, dos Moshe y Aarón, uno es el Criador, uno es el Criador, Baruch Hu.
That was Yehoram Gaon, the Israeli Sephardic star, singing Ken Supiense, Who Knows One, from the end of the Passover Seder on our 400th Too Jewish radio show. You know, Yoram Gaon became famous in the movie Casablanca back in 1974. Wow, my own bar mitzvah year, a mere 36 years ago. Double chai. Huh. In any case, Pesach is the most observed Jewish festival, edging out Hanukkah nowadays, with nearly three-quarters of all Jews attending a Passover Seder. While all Jewish holidays provide wonderful opportunities for Jewish musical expression, Pesach is particularly rich in both the melodic possibilities it offers and the varieties of types of music you can feature, both serious and silly. In the spirit of a holiday that is both profoundly serious, what can be more powerful than celebrating freedom from oppression or praying for the liberation of all who are enslaved? But Pesach is also fun and sometimes silly. So here's one of my favorite takes on just what matzah is really like. It's from the Smooth E, Eric Schwartz.
I feel like a freak, because every time I pull out something to eat for this week, I can't do this, because I'm Jewish, and I can't eat bread. Yeah, my rabbi said only matzah. Any way you want to eat it, cold or hot, it's matzah. Fun for your mother, brother, sister, father, matzah. Buy in bulk for a lower cost per box, it's matzah, 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 matzah. Put on your... Wait, that's over. So get your... over to my pad, it's Passover. I'm the mad flow, a smoothie, and I hope you understand it. If you want the story of Passover, rent the Ten Commandments, starring Charlton Heston. But I got a question about the bread that is unleavened, causing indigestion. Call matzah. Eat it for a week, we got stuff. No bread, no pasta. Best believe a Jew is stopped up. Now Moses made the matzah when he was fleeing Egypt. Had no time for bread to rise, he said, I just leave it. We can eat it like this, feed it to the Hebrews. But little did he know that the weight would end up equal. Cause
let my people go.
Became the anthem, get your damn hands up, maybe it will help you pass some. How could one bread rock is so famous when the taste is the same flavor of the box it came in? Matzah. Eat it at once, ain't no second guessing.
Matzah.
Leaving crumbs on my lap and chest, and it's called matzah. I found the ivy comb in my small intestine.
That was Jewish hip-hop artist Eric Schwartz talking about matzah on Passover, which we are commanded to eat at Seder tomorrow night. Remember, an entire sheet of matzah in order to fulfill the mitzvah, the commandment to eat unleavened bread, as our ancestors did. You know, the experience of Seder is such a complete immersion in ways to understand freedom through words, songs, stories, foods, touch, taste, smell, even physical activities like looking for the afikoman. Everything about it has layers of meaning and purpose, and I like nearly everything about the Seder except one thing. Matzah. Now, many of you have heard my rants over the years about matzah, the true bread of affliction. It is a dry, tasteless bread we eat only because our ancestors didn't have time to allow it to rise. In the haste of an exodus from 400 years of Egyptian slavery some 2,200 years ago. Personally, I can't stand matzah. I never eat it except on Passover. It is to me the anti-food and tastes very much like the cardboard box it comes in. I have heard all the excuses for matzah. It's great with butter and salt on it. Doesn't take any attention away from the foods you put it on. You can use it for months without it going stale because it tastes stale to start with. All of those arguments work equally well in explaining why we should eat newsprint or sawdust, which tastes, you know, like matzah. I'll eat it on Pesach because I have to, and I'm a Jew, and of course a rabbi, and so I have no choice. Otherwise, yuck. Now, there is an even less flavorful version of matzah available too, if you can believe it. It's called shmura matzah, meaning carefully watched by rabbis to make sure that no leavening gets in at any stage of the process. Apparently, these rabbis also make sure that no flavor gets in. It's much more expensive, shmura matzah is, than regular matzah. Apparently, there's an inverse relationship on Passover between taste and cost, at least where matzah is concerned. Well, in my house, we use it for Seder, just, you know, to be extra kosher. There is one good side to eating matzah. It makes the bitter herbs taste pretty good by comparison. Yes, my friends, it's matzah, coming soon to a Seder near you. in non-Passover news. When we come back on Too Jewish in a few moments, we'll meet our terrific guest, author, sports writer, screenwriter, songwriter, radio and TV personality, and all-around journalistic talent, Mitch Albom, author of Tuesdays with Maury and The Five People You Meet in Heaven, explaining why he wrote his new bestseller, Have a Little Faith, and just how he found his. Meet Mitch Albom when he joins us in a few moments right here on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114. Mimuna is the most unusual and fun Jewish event in Tucson. Great music, dance, delicious food, and fun in a fabulous, unusual way. Tuesday night, April 6th at 7 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel's, join in a fabulous Mimuna Moroccan Festival as we conclude Passover with great music and terrific treats from the Jewish tradition of Morocco. We'll sing traditional Moroccan melodies and dance up a storm as we end the Festival of Matzah with lots of non-Passover treats. Join Rabbi Sam Cohen and classical guitarist Steve Shulman for a spectacular program of exciting Sephardic music and performance, all accompanied by a marvelous meal of delicious and unique Mimuna sweets and treats. It's a great night of wonderful music, food, drink, and supple dancing, co-sponsored by the Israel Center and Temple Emmanuel. Tickets for the Mimuna Festival are just $10 in advance for Temple and JCC members, $12 for general admission, and $15 at the door. Students with an ID card are just $5, and all children under the age of 13 attend free. All food and drink is included. Call 327-4501 to get your tickets now for the Mimuna Festival and Concert, Thursday, April 6th at 7 p.m. with the Israel Center at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road.
We're delighted to welcome to Too Jewish this morning author Mitch Albom, an internationally renowned and best-selling writer, author of Five People You Meet in Heaven, Tuesdays with Maury, which is one of the best-selling nonfiction books of all time, and his most recent, Have a Little Faith. His books have collectively sold over 30 million copies worldwide, not bad, been published in 41 territories in 42 languages, and been made into Emmy Award-winning and critically acclaimed TV movies. Mitch is from Passaic, New Jersey, the middle of three children. Family moved to Buffalo, New York, before settling in Oakland, New Jersey, not far from Philadelphia. That's the New Jersey part of Philadelphia. He grew up wanting to be a cartoonist, then switched to music, taught himself piano, and played in bands. Later, he actually became a successful songwriter, including a song for Warren Zevon. Mitch Albom has had quite a spectacular career as a journalist, author, musician, radio show host, and, well, you know, frankly, just about everything. We're delighted to welcome to Too Jewish, Mitch Albom. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, you have now written three wildly successful bestsellers, one of them among the best-selling nonfiction books in human history. Silly question. You know, how would your parents feel about that?
Well, I can answer that question because thankfully my parents are still with me. I think they're very happy about it, but, you know, this happened to me rather later in life. You know, it wasn't like the first thing I did, and so they've had a chance to see me as a writer and in all different levels. And, you know, I was better known as a sports writer before Tuesdays with Maury, and that was sort of one world. And now Tuesdays with Maury and Have a Little Faith and For One More Day and Five People and those kind of books have sort of taken me into a different world. So I don't know, from my parents' point of view, it just depends on who wants to talk to them about what, you know.
I was thinking, you know, do they still wish you had become a doctor like every other Jewish?
Well, you know, like most Jewish parents, my parents wanted me to be, you know, a doctor or a lawyer only until such time as I actually had success in something else. And then it was, oh, yes, we knew this is what you were meant to be all along, you know. But, you know, I have to say that they were the kind of people that said, if you're happy doing what you're doing, do it. And I have been, so I'm very lucky that way.
I've been following you since I think I first read something of yours, maybe in Sports Illustrated. How many graduates from Columbia's MBA program and the Graduate School of Journalism end up as sports writers?
You know, I don't know, but there have been a few. I mean, probably disproportionate amount to, because it's a small group, which is funny because at least when I was there at Columbia, they didn't teach sports writing. There was never a course or anything like that. If you learned how to become a sports writer, you did it on your own, which is what I did. You know, I volunteered at a local magazine, a sport magazine in New York, but it wasn't as if I ever had a teacher show me how to be a sports writer, so it was kind of an accident.
We will talk much more with Mitch Albom, author of Have a Little Faith, A True Story, a great story about, well, about a death and a life, his own rabbi, Albert Lewis, growing up. Alav HaShalom, and we'll also find out more about Tuesdays with Maury when we come back with Mitch Albom on Too Jewish.
If your parents or other loved ones are in need of assisted living, consider making the choice that Dorothy Daniels' family made, Handmaker.
Living at Handmaker does make me feel very independent, like I was still in my house. The best part of it is I don't have to clean it.
Assisted living at Handmaker promotes an active and independent life. All needs are met, including weekly housekeeping and linen service, transportation to doctor's appointments, restaurants, banks, and shopping. And living at Handmaker is fun.
Every 2 weeks, there is a man who comes with a saxophone, and we dance, and I love that because I love to dance.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes 1 and 2 bedroom suites and cozy studios with patios and balconies.
I would recommend Handmaker to anyone because I feel very safe and secure here. The people that work here are very nice, considerate, and that means a lot.
For a tour and consultation, call 322-7035 or visit their website at handmaker.org.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can also get CDs of past and present shows through the website, downloading us from there or at the Apple iTunes store as very popular Jewish podcasts. We welcome our Jerusalem correspondent, Rabbi David Wilfond. Good morning, Gingy.
Hi, Sam. Good morning.
So Pesach is just tomorrow, coming around the corner. Let's talk a little bit about what's unique about Pesach in Eretz Yisrael and the land of Israel.
Well, something that I only understood coming here, different than in America, when you talk about Israel and Egypt, and it seems really far away. Here, when we talk about leaving Egypt, it's like 150 miles over there. It's the border. It's about how we left the crap of being slaves over there and came to this place of milk and honey right here. And so there's a real cool feeling of, like, Pesach is about being in Israel. Pesach, the morning before, when they have the burning of the chametz. So in America, sometimes we did that at the synagogue, but not, like, all over the neighborhood. Here in Jerusalem, in practically every parking lot, outside of every apartment building, near every house, people take the bread out of their apartments and light it up, and it smells terrible. And there are these little fires going on all over the place, and it's kind of a wild scene. And if you go into Mea Shearim, and it's one of the few times that it's pretty easy to go walking in there, they have special bakeries making matzah, and they're very cool about people just walking in. And it's kind of neat to walk in, and you can actually buy matzah out of the oven. Now, just like eating fresh bread out of the oven tastes different than bread from the grocery store, a hot matzah is a whole different flavor and a whole different experience.
That's good because I hate matzah, so maybe you would.
It's really cool. So if you want a different taste of matzah, it's worth coming here and getting a hot one. I'd also say Pesach here is the best weather of the year. The country is blooming, and everything is green, and there's flowers. The other Pesach thought I would just add is that it used to be that Pesach was only celebrated in Jerusalem. that people walked in biblical times from all over the country to the temple for a huge family reunion with all the tribes. And there's still a sense of that. During Pesach, people really descend on Jerusalem. It's full of people. And I once heard a story that I'll just share a little bit of the story. We often don't think of this. How was Pesach celebrated for the first 1,000 years after the Exodus? And it's surprising sometimes to think this, but they didn't have Manischewitz wine, and they didn't have the Maxwell House Haggadah. In fact, there was no Haggadah for the first 1,000 years after the Exodus. What did people do? They came to Jerusalem. They asked. They bought a lamb roast from the Kohanim, and they would sit on a blanket on one of the hills surrounding Mount Moriah, maybe Mount Zion, or one of the other hills, and they'd sit with their family. They'd say, I want to tell you a story. We're born here in Israel, but my grandfather was a slave in Egypt. And then they would say the next generation, maybe we're born here in Israel, but my great-grandfather is a slave in Egypt, and I want to tell you about it. And there's really a sense that, that's what it was like for the first 1,000 years. We sit with the family, eat a meal, and tell the story. Now, eventually, people got a little bit anxious. Are they really going to tell the story right? And so they had to create this Haggadah. But one of my teachers used to say, when we left Egypt, we're not supposed to be slaves anymore, and we're not supposed to be slaves even to the Haggadah. The Haggadah is to give us ideas of what to talk about, but we don't have to be literally trapped or enslaved to it. As long as we talk about what it was to be a slave and what does it mean now to be free and how to get that freedom for others as well. So a little bit about Jerusalem and Pesach.
Great lesson for the coming of Pesach. Chag Pesach, Sameach v'kasher, Gam ken lecha. Thanks, Gingy. We'll talk next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We welcome our Mivinar, expert on Jewish ethics, Amy Hirschberg-Letterman. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So, very interesting area. A lot of Jews think that you can't donate organs, that there's some Jewish prohibition on being an organ donor. Let's talk about that.
I would love to. Well, first, we have to talk always, as we do, about the overview of the topic. Where do we even access the concept of organ donation? And, of course, it goes to the whole idea of our bodies. And our bodies are not ours in the way that we own them. They are really ours to serve God. So we have this sense that we have a number of mitzvot or values that will really determine the Jewish view on organ donation. And the three, really, the big ones are pikuach nefesh, saving another life whenever we can, the concept of chesed, which is compassion towards others who need an organ, who have lost an eye or you know, need an organ to continue to live a full life. And then with respect to organ donation upon death, the concept of kavod hamet, which is honoring the dead. And a fourth one that comes into play is kiddush hashem, which is in all of these acts of giving of our bodies to serve God, we honor God. So, you know, the concept, and it's really fascinating, about organ donation as being somehow contrary to Jewish law really couldn't be farther from the truth. You know, we have certainly a number of different positions, but basically, in the Jewish world, the question really arises, you know, what is our responsibility to help another person to save a life? And statistically, there are, you know, every, I think, 11 minutes, there's at least another person added to the waiting list for organs, and 18 people die every day waiting for a transplant. And one organ donor can save 8 lives, and an organ and tissue donor can save 50 lives. So it's clear that the need is there, and it's clear that we have an opportunity to actually serve God by saving lives in doing so. Then the question always becomes, what is the risk and what is the benefit? Because we have an obligation to save our own life. That takes precedence over saving the life of another. We have that in the Torah, you know, and that we have this obligation, of course, so that we have to ask, will the possibility, if you are a living donor, actually result in risk of death to you? It's a balanced risk to the both the rescuer and the survivor, so to speak. But in cases, for example, like kidney transplants, where the risk today is minimal, or blood donation or tissue donation, where these are minimal risks with a tremendous amount of benefit, all movements, including the Orthodox movement, would encourage and urge people to give of their organs.
And in fact, I mean, in the Orthodox world, there are now renowned Orthodox authorities who accept organ donation, which was certainly
not true. Not only that, you're absolutely right. There's actually a wonderful website that is the Orthodox website on halakha, and it's very, very instructive to read if anyone has any concerns about it. So the bottom line is, give a life, save a life. It's a very Jewish thing to do.
I thank you for that, Amy. We'll talk next week.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, from Two Jewish Storyteller Jordan Hill, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the outstanding restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant on the J Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
I think the most special meal in all of Arizona is a dinner at Janos.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. I tell you, I'm really proud of it. We have so much fun. That's what Janos is all about. Special foods, special people, special occasions, but really using the best products available to us and really taking the time and crafting wonderful, wonderful, beautiful, and perfectly executed food.
My wife calls it, I think I've told you this before, magic food. It's just, you can't believe that it can taste quite the way it does.
No, that's nice of you to say. Well, I'll tell you, we really have a lot of fun doing it, and the flavors we use are really, really terrific. The service is great, and so we're just proud of what we do and love having people come in for dinner.
For an outstanding restaurant experience, the phone number for Janos.
615-6100. You can go online, www.janos.com.
For the best meal in all of Southern Arizona.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in Southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi. You know, as we approach the Passover season, we always sort of review in our minds the same questions about where are Jews free and where are they still enslaved and where might we hope to free them? And, you know, there's some obvious places where Jews live in clear and present danger, like in Iran, in Syria, and a couple of other places.
And really anywhere in the Arab world, many other Muslim countries where Jews are not free to be Jews fully, sure.
But I think a more intriguing question, and one that I'd like to discuss with you, even over a couple of sessions, is the question of, are Jews truly free anywhere? In the sense that even in a country like the United States, where our civil rights are guaranteed and Jews have enjoyed an unprecedented level of participation in public affairs and whatever, you know, there are some senses in which we're all slaves to something or another, be it our BlackBerry or the dictates of fashion or the perceived need to make a lot of money or, you know, the sort of values of a wider society. I mean, I often discuss with my students which of the Ten Commandments is the most difficult one to observe. And the conclusion that they usually come to is that it's actually the first commandment, which is, I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt have no other gods before me. I brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, blah, 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 which seems to relate to this time of year in one sense of bringing us out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. But it does in another sense too, which is we all have sort of multiple gods or idols or things that we worship or strive to be other than that which is dictated by the best kind of morality or the common good or the higher public good. And those things, those forms of idol worship, those ways of worshiping other gods and forgetting the first commandment, really constitute a kind of slavery or a kind of bondage. And I think part of what Passover is about and part of the sort of lesson of the Seder, which is everybody must regard himself or herself as if he or she personally went out of Egypt, is that this task of liberating ourselves is ultimately up to us. Nobody else can do it for us, including God. And one of the ways that we learn about the Passover story is that the Jewish people had to take the first step. They had to follow Moses into the Red Sea. God couldn't do it all or wouldn't do it all. There's an element of liberation that requires a daring, courageous participation on the part of he or she who would be liberated.
You know, I really agree that freedom is a choice, and living a free life and living to our own ideals requires personal commitment, personal courage at this time of year of freedom. Sman Chirutenu. Thanks, Tom. Chag Sameach. A happy and a healthy Passover. I'll see you next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service just for Pesach. A Jewish man is waiting in line to be knighted by the Queen of England. He is supposed to kneel and recite a special sentence in Latin. But his turn comes, he kneels, the Queen taps him on the shoulder with a sword, and in the panic of the excitement, he forgets the Latin. Thinking quickly, he recites the only other line he knows in a foreign language, which he remembers from the Passover Seder. Manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halelot. The puzzled Queen turns to her advisors and says, "Why is this night different from all other nights?" That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. For Pesach, you should live and be well every night. We now welcome our Too Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Rabbi. You know, this time last year was Passover, as it often is this time in the year. And I remember I told some stories about the crossing of the Sea of Reeds. And I have one more of those stories, a different take. Last year, I told about the men all wrestling to get there and the women joining hands, or the story of Nachshon, who dove in because of his faith. But this story has more of a universal aspect, because it says that there, again, were the Jews, perched between the Sea of Reeds on one side and the approaching army of Pharaoh on chariot coming at them. And they were sitting there wedged between, not knowing what to do. And word came to Moses and spread somehow through all the people that the Sea of Reeds would open, that it would part. And through that way, people would find themselves to safety. And everyone felt that this was going to happen. They had such faith in God in this version of the story that they didn't wait for Moses to hold his staff over. They didn't wait for Nachshon to go jumping in. They didn't wrestle with each other or fight with each other. Instead, they all started walking as a single body into the water of the Sea of Reeds. And as they stepped into the water, they had such faith and such love of God that they started saying, "Mi chamocha Adonai, how great are you, God?" And they kept on walking, walking deeper and deeper until soon the water had risen over their knees and over their thighs, and still, without the sea having even parted yet, they were saying, "Mi chamocha Adonai, how great are you, God?" And still the water, they were getting deeper and deeper into it, and it was rising up over their shoulders, up past their neck, and they had such devoutness, such faith, that they just kept on walking, having faith that God would open that sea. And they kept on saying, "Mi chamocha Adonai, mi chamocha Adonai." And as they were saying that, the water was rising so high that it got into their mouths, and they even coughed and said, "Mi chamocha Adonai." And with that communal show of faith, God saw that they were worthy, and the Sea of Reeds shoom, opened, and they made their way to safety. And to this very day, in almost every service, in every normal service we have, we sing that prayer, "Mi chamocha Adonai." And the first part always is "Mi chamocha," and the second part is always "Mi chamocha." And this is the story why. We remember the faith of those people, willing to step so deep into the water they were almost choking, knowing that God would be there.
Thanks, Jordan. We'll get another story next week. And now a word of Torah. This week's portions are chosen especially for reading on the holiday of Passover, in addition to the usual suspects for Torah reading for Pesach: plagues, the Passover sacrifice, crossing of the Sea of Reeds, and the washing away of the Egyptian army and its chariots, the song of Moses at the sea. There's one unusual special Torah reading we'll chant it this coming Saturday. It's from the portion of Ki Tisa in Exodus. It includes one of the more mystical and puzzling sections in the whole Torah. Moses asks that God's presence be revealed to him directly, and God replies, "You shall not see my face and live." You shall not see my face and live. The power and presence of the divine is too much for even the greatest of our ancestors to be allowed to fully encounter it. God invites, well, commands, really, Moses to hide his own face in a cleft in the rock, and God allows the divine presence to pass behind Moses. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu, our great teacher Moses, who supposedly knows God panim el panim, face to face, actually only gets the backside of God. That's not to imply that God moons Moses. Although we are created B'Tselem Elohim, in the image of God, we don't tend to think that we are somehow subject only to the flippancy of God. No, this curious passage teaches a great lesson. We are not going to be saved by gazing at God's face or by the direct experience of God's intent. Our own way is more complex, more subtle, more challenging, and more honest and beautiful. We have the responsibility to seek God's presence in the world, to find the God traces that are everywhere, if we can only make ourselves aware enough to look for them. If we can do that, we will truly see God's face in the faces of our fellow human beings. Our Jewish Poetry Slam this morning, in honor of the holiday of Pesach, comes from poet Marge Piercy. She is quite likely the best poet of the Passover season since Moses himself. It's called Saltwater. It is a bowl of tears on the table into which we dip the parsley, into which we dip the egg. It's a miniature ocean on the table, salt as the sea of reeds through which they were to pass. Not to safety, never safety, but to where they were promised they would, if they chose, be free. It is the salt water of our sweat, pressed through our skin, as the body labors, for we are bidden not only to rest on the seventh day, but to work on the others. And the brain, too, in its fever of creation, exudes salt. Salt like the sea, salt like our blood, salt like the waters of the womb, the salt of regret, and the salt of effort. That's Marge Piercy's fine poem for the Seder table. First Seder, remember, is tomorrow night. It's called Saltwater. When we come back on Two Jewish in a few moments, we'll get the news of Jews around the world and talk with our outstanding guest, Mitch Albom, author of Tuesdays with Maury, who found his own Jewish faith in a most unusual way. Find out how when we come back on Two Jewish.
If you're like most people, your biggest purchase is your home. Don't you wish there was someone you could turn to who not only had knowledge and experience, but who truly cared about you? If you're looking to buy or sell a home, you need to know Jill Rich. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. With over 20 years of experience, Jill's one of Tucson's top realtors. She specializes in all kinds of residential property. She can find you a starter house or a castle. Jill will find you the perfect home. While the stock market has wild gyrations, real estate grows in value. If you want to invest in income property, Jill can guide you. And if you're thinking about selling your home, Jill provides a personal marketing program to sell your house fast. You can reach Jill Rich at Realty Executives River Road Office, 615-8400. Jill provides strong representation in a caring way. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. Jill Rich, call 615-8400.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Our brothers,
Great Britain has ordered the expulsion of a senior Israeli diplomat after an investigation concluded Israel was responsible for forging national passports, or so said Britain's Foreign Secretary David Miliband, who is Jewish, by the way. Miliband, speaking before the House of Commons, announced, "I have asked that a member of the Embassy of Israel be withdrawn, and that is taking place. We've been very clear with the Israelis about the basis upon which we are asking the individual to leave." Miliband said an investigation by the Serious and Organized Crime Squad, I love the names they use in England, found that Israel's Mossad provided members of an assassination team with forged British passports in order to kill top Hamas commander Mahmoud al-Mabou in a hotel room in Dubai in January, a story we've been following on Too Jewish. The expelled Israeli diplomat's identity was not given, but it has been speculated that it is the Mossad's London representative. Miliband said he has demanded Israel assure the British government British citizens' identities will not be used again in such an operation. 26 members of an assassination team, widely speculated to have been Mossad secret agents, used forged passports from Britain, Ireland, Australia, and Germany to enter and leave Dubai. Israel has neither confirmed nor denied its involvement in Mahmoud's assassination. Expulsion of a diplomat is a very serious matter, but not so serious as breaking off relations. Israel's ambassador to London, Ron Prozor, was summoned last week to the Foreign Office in London and told the results of the British inquiry into Mahmoud's slaying. The passports of British citizens that were forged reportedly were taken away at the airport in Israel for inspection. In Washington, D.C., 40 members of the U.S. House of Representatives signed a letter warning Cuba that improved relations are contingent on the release of a jailed Jewish American. Alan Gross, who is 60, has been held since December 3rd. He was arrested while reportedly assisting the Cuban Jewish community to connect to the Internet. My, that does sound terribly criminal. His congressman, U.S. Representative Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, initiated the letter. It is our understanding that at the time of his arrest, Alan Gross was in Cuba to help the Jewish community improve its ability to communicate with Jews, both in Cuba and overseas. He was working on a U.S. government contract. Mr. Gross's work in Cuba emanated from his desire to make a positive impact for others of his faith, that is, Jews, on the island. The Cuban government has banned such U.S. agencies for international development projects. The arrest and imprisonment of Alan Gross is viewed with great consternation by the government of the U.S., including both Democratic and Republican members of the United States Congress, whether liberal or conservative, the congressional letter said to Cuba. It has caused many to doubt your government's expressed desire to improve relations with the United States. We cannot assist in that regard while Mr. Gross is detained in a Cuban prison. We urge you in the strongest possible terms to immediately and unconditionally release Alan Gross and allow him to return from Cuba to his family in the United States. Well, at this season of freedom, may Alan Gross be liberated from his Cuban jail for trying to help the Jewish community of Cuba. And just in time for Passover and Easter, the Simpsons are going to Israel. Set to air tonight, this Sunday before Pesach begins, and Palm Sunday, by the way, the greatest story ever dode finds the Simpson family visiting Jerusalem with a surly Israeli tour guide voiced by Sacha Baron Cohen, famous for Borat and infamous for whatever that horrible Austrian character he created was. Executive producer Al Jean, who has been with The Simpsons since its launch in 1989, 21 years ago, says the episode focuses exclusively on the family's experiences in Jerusalem, doesn't venture into the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's a 20-minute show, he said. There's a limited scope. Instead, Jean says, the writers drew on their own Israel experiences to create a Jerusalem that's fanciful but relatable to real life in the Holy Land. In addition to his role in the episode, Sacha Baron Cohen, who lived for a year in Israel with the Habonim Dror youth group, joined the writers for an hour to pitch jokes. He would ad-lib amazingly, said Jean of the Borat actor. As funny an actor as I've ever worked with, he's just brilliant. He is indeed. In one scene, tour guide Jacob, played by Baron Cohen, presses the Simpsons for positive marks on a comment card. When Marge accuses him of being pushy, he snaps back, "Try living next to Syria for 2 months and see how laid back you are!" Ned Flanders, the Simpsons neighbor who has taken it upon himself to redeem Homer Simpson, is the one who invited the Simpsons on a Christian tour of the Holy Land. Flanders feels that when Homer sees the sacred sites, he'll become a good person. When the family visits the Kotel, the Western Wall, Bart pulls out and reads some of the notes and responds, "Nope, not gonna happen. Nope, not gonna happen." At the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, Homer's behavior gets Flanders banned for life. Of course, it's the Israeli hotel's opulent breakfast buffet that appeals most to Homer Simpson. In the end, Homer tries to unite the faiths through a message of peace and chicken, because everybody eats chicken, no matter what religion they're in. Well, we wish the Simpsons and his Sia Tova a happy and healthy trip to Israel. May Israel survive it. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We're delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish This Morning Mitch Albom, the internationally renowned author, journalist, screenwriter, playwright, radio and TV broadcaster, and rock musician. Is there anything you haven't tried?
Yes, anything having to do with math, science, or cooking.
I want to talk about Have a Little Faith, which has been, again, a really terrific success. Interesting story. You talk about how your real Jewish experience consisted of going back home to New Jersey for the high holidays. You're very closely associated with Detroit, of course. And then Rabbi Albert Lewis asked you a very strange request, which you talk about a great deal in the book. Could you just kind of relive that for us a little bit?
Yeah, it happened about 10 years ago. I went back to the small town where I grew up in New Jersey. And after a little talk that I gave, the rabbi who had been the only rabbi I'd ever had, because he was at the synagogue when my parents joined it when I was 6 months old, and he was still there 40-something years later, came up to me and asked me if he could ask me a favor. And he'd never asked me a favor before, so I said, sure. He was 82 at the time. He was using a cane. And he said, I'd like you to do the eulogy at my funeral. And, of course, this threw me on 1,000 levels. Number one, I didn't know if he was sick or dying. Number two, who was I to do anybody's eulogy at a funeral? And number three, how do you do the eulogy for the guy who does eulogies? You know, I thought rabbis and priests and pastors had this stuff all worked out amongst themselves. You know, if I go first, you do me. You go first, I'll do you.
We do, by the way, Mitch. This was a special circumstance.
This is a special case. Well, see this. So my suspicions were correct. And so him asking me, I was stunned, really speechless. And I said I needed to think about it. A few days later, I called him up and I said, well, I'll do it under one condition. I need to get to know you as a human being. I've only known you from the seats, you know, and the cheap seats at that. And if I'm going to speak at this event, which I hope doesn't happen for a long time, but I need to know who you are as a man. And he said, well, all right, I accept. And that began what I thought would be, you know, maybe a handful of visits. Obviously, when somebody asks you to do a eulogy, in the back of your mind, you feel that time is short. But it turned out to be an eight-year adventure. He lived another 8 years, albeit through strokes and small heart attacks and all kinds of other health scares, but he lived. And those 8 years ended up being a sort of long, roundabout return journey to my Jewish roots and to my admiration for the wisdom of faith when it's practiced purely, and of a man who I had feared as a kid, but who I really came to love and respect just before he died.
You know, your experience in Tuesdays with Morrie has, of course, some similarities to this experience in Have a Little Faith. But in Have a Little Faith, you parallel two stories, a story of Rabbi Lewis with Reverend Henry Covington. How did you decide to do that?
Well, I really didn't think about doing a book for a long time in this process. Unlike Tuesdays with Morrie, where I decided to do a book only to pay Morrie's medical bills, I needed to do it because there was no other way to pay his enormous bills, and so he knew before he died that I was going to try to write a book. And in fact, we got a publisher to agree to publish it just a few weeks before he died. He never saw a word of the book, but he knew that all the proceeds from the book that we got would go to pay his medical bills. With Albert Lewis, it was just an experience I was going through, you know, trying to prepare myself to do a eulogy. And it was only about 4 or 5 years into the process that I came in contact with a pastor here in Detroit, where I live, who ran a church and a homeless shelter inside a church despite the fact that his church had this giant hole in its roof where rain and snow literally came in, landed on the congregants, landed on the pews, froze the church. It was dirt poor and unable to be heated. In fact, they even had to build a plastic tent inside their church just to try to stay warm in the winter months and try not to stay dry. And when I got involved with this church and involved with the homeless there and saw that faith was being exercised there in a much different way, in a much poorer environment, not like the suburban Jewish synagogue that I was used to, but yet and still it was the same in terms of faith, caring for people, caring for the poor, believing that God had something better in mind, that I began to think, well, maybe this would be an interesting way to do a book about faith, which I had never really wanted to do because I think there are so many of them and some of them tend to sort of repeat themselves. But very few that I'd ever read actually compared two very different faiths, two very different ways of life, and tried to find the similarity in it. And that's when I thought that Have a Little Faith would be a good concept.
You talk about recovering faith, your own faith, which, whether it's neglected or just wasn't central, over the course of this experience. How else has that manifested itself since the book?
Well, in order to understand how it manifests itself, you really have to understand how far I had come from it. I did not belong to any synagogue, despite the fact that I had gone to basically a yeshiva. It was not called yeshiva, but it ran like a yeshiva for my entire 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th grades. When I was a kid, I even was taught to read Aramaic, and Rashi, and Rambam, and Moses Maimonides, and all the rest of it. So I had a heavy dipping into Jewish faith when I was a kid, and then really just walked away from it. I didn't have some sort of tragic loss. I just sort of felt, well, all right, I did that. I know that. That's in the back of my head. Now I'm just going to go live my life. And I was doing okay, and I was healthy, and fine, and nobody was dying and all the things that make you race back to religion. So I just sort of got apathetic. And it was only as a result of starting to visit with Rabbi Lewis again and then getting involved with this church here that I really saw the wonderful value of a faithful life and saw past the hypocrisies of it, which I had started to focus on, the church scandals and ethnic cleansing and all the things that are done in the name of faith that really have nothing to do with faith.
I want to thank Mitch Albom for a great visit here on Too Jewish. A last quick question. How's it feel to watch somebody else playing you on TV?
Well, if you're talking about Tuesdays with Morrie, the movie, it was very strange. I went to the set once, saw Jack Lemmon playing Morrie, and saw Hank Azaria playing me, and witnessed a scene, where I was 10 feet away and they were calling each other Morrie and Mitch and they were using the language that I had used, and I just found it so kind of disconcerting that I never went back because it was strange. But Hank and I have been friends over the years, remain friends, and I always tease him that when he's in the actor's old age home, there'll be an actor to the left of him who says, when I was younger, I played Othello. And the other guy on the right says, when I was younger, I played Hamlet. And he's going to be in the middle saying, when I was younger, I played Mitch Albom. They're going to look at each other and say, who? So we have a laugh over that.
Thanks so much, Mitch. The book is called Have a Little Faith, A True Story. It's a great story. I urge you to get it. I have received so far 4 gift copies of it by people who think I should read it. So I read it.
Well, you can gift the other 3 to other people.
I promise. I'll keep passing it on. That doesn't help your book sales.
That's okay.
Thank you, Mitch.
All right.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Mimuna is the most unusual and fun Jewish event in Tucson. Great music, dance, delicious food, and fun in a fabulous, unusual way. Tuesday night, April 6th at 7 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel's, join in a fabulous Mimuna Moroccan Festival as we conclude Passover with great music and terrific treats from the Jewish tradition of Morocco. We'll sing traditional Moroccan melodies and dance up a storm as we end the Festival of Matzah with lots of non-Passover treats. Join Rabbi Sam Cohen and classical guitarist Steve Shulman for a spectacular program of exciting Sephardic music and
performance, all accompanied by a marvelous meal of delicious and unique Mimuna sweets and treats. It's a great night of wonderful music, food, drink, and supple dancing, co-sponsored by the Israel Center and Temple Emmanuel. Tickets for the Mimuna Festival are just $10 in advance for Temple and JCC members, $12 for general admission, and $15 at the door. Students with an ID card are just $5, and all children under the age of 13 attend free. All food and drink is included. Call 327-4501 to get your tickets now for the Mimuna Festival and Concert, Thursday, April 6th at 7 p.m. with the Israel Center at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Sam Harris, founder of the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center. Our playout this morning comes from our pre-Passover musical preview. It's from cantor Alberto Mizrahi, a rollicking song from the end of the Seder, which is tomorrow night and Tuesday night too, if you're conservative or Orthodox or just like Seders. It's called Kilo Na'eh. My friends, have a Chag Pesach Sameach V'Kasher, a good, healthy, sweet, and kosher Pesach, a Passover of joy, and a Shavua Tov, a week, we pray, of peace.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.